As I mentioned, it's a very, very fast-paced day today. We are going to start out with healthcare. As most of you all know, healthcare is a major driver here on the Kenai Peninsula. Today, we're fortunate we have Albert Wall, the CEO of the Peninsula Community Health Services, here today. He was previously the director of the Division of Behavioral Health and the budget manager of the Department of Health and Social Services. Wall has 20 years of experience in the behavioral health field in positions ranging from the direct service provider to chief executive. He's also worked for DHSS as a Medicare budget manager before he was called back into the military service after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. I'd like you all to give me a nice warm welcome to Albert Wall.
Thank you. Good morning. What he didn't say is I'm also a recovering preacher, so you just gave me a mic, and you're in for a ride. No, the biggest challenge, I think, is I only got, 20 minutes? I'll try to keep myself under that out of respect for all the speakers in the day. So this morning I get to speak about healthcare, and when you come to economic drivers, really healthcare is the benevolent gorilla in the corner of the room when you talk about it. Benevolent because obviously we perform services that are necessary and needful for all mankind, but gorilla because we're huge. And there's a lot of money behind what happens. I'll tell you, in the world, if you back up and look at the big picture, the United States has the highest healthcare costs of any nation on the planet. And when you look at the United States, Alaska has the highest healthcare costs of the states. When you look at the peninsula, We rank there up there pretty high as all the regions in the state of Alaska. So it is a huge economic driving factor for this area. I'm going to talk a little bit about from the perspective of community health centers, because that's where I'm at right now. Community health centers are a kind of a network provider of health services. We're integrated, meaning we do all kinds of services, primary care, specialty care, dental services, behavioral health. Integration really looks at people as a whole person. So I know my background's behavioral health, as you mentioned, and I can't tell you how many times as a professional counselor, I would have loved to have a doctor in my back pocket because I knew the driving factor in an individual's depression or anxiety or whatever it was a healthcare problem. Like their diabetes was out of control or their blood sugar or your blood pressure was out of control. And that's really what was driving what was going on in their life, but I couldn't address it. So we look at things as a community health center as integrated, and so there's a behavioral health professional alongside of a primary care physician that can help out with that. The other thing that community health centers do a little bit differently is we kind of look at population health as the basis of our service line. So preventative measures are important to us. We look at the big picture. We're a network of providers. There's thousands of community health centers in the nation. And we look at population health. So we'll look at things like obesity and smoking cessation and those preventative measures that we can do in advance that stops the larger problems, the more expensive problems down the line. So I have a couple of, I can't see it real well, but I have a couple of slides to show you. This just gives you some facts about community health centers in the big picture. I'm going to start there and then kind of zoom into community health centers in Alaska through the Primary Care Association, and then specifically Peninsula Community Health Center. So here you have 2017 year in review, some statistics up there. I'm looking at the screen sideways, but the number of clinical encounters that community health centers see across the nation ranks in literally hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars a year. The economic factors that happen then is Peninsula Community Health Center here, they bring in money from the federal government because we have a federal grant. We bring in money from the state government because we have a state grant. We bring in money from the insurance companies because they pay for care, and we bring in local money as well. So the economic impact kind of compounds over time. Can you go to the next slide, please? Oh, I have the clicker. Oh, I'll go to the next slide. Do I have to point at a certain area? Sweet. Okay. Excellent. Okay, so like I was saying, we focus not only on population health and integrated service, but we also focus on specific areas of need. So the community health centers are designed to be kind of that service provider of almost last resort. Now, we see all kinds of people who come into the clinic, But we're always there for people who even cannot pay. So we have a sliding fee scale for people who can't pay, who are not resourced, who do not have insurance. But the real kind of gorilla in the corner of the room factor of this is that everybody has health needs, always. And our government is mandating some sort of health insurance now. And so there's always the financial factor that's behind what's going on with the health. So if you can identify those quality of life factors for a person and help them in that area, they tend to be more successful. And it's not 100% for everybody. But the reality is, if you can help them with their health and help them with their behavioral health, usually it has a positive impact on where they're at in life as their finances and their jobs and all kinds of things. Watching my time. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about just the value of health centers in the state. These statistics come from the Primary Care Association in the state of Alaska. Community health centers are all part of the Primary Care Association nationally, and there's regions, of course, so Northwest region, and then there's one for the state of Alaska. They band together in terms of advocacy and addressing health needs. Sometimes we can help each other out with providers, which is a huge need, recruitment and retention of providers. But the Primary Care Association tracks what we do and then reports this up so that we can use this in terms of advocacy. One of the ways that a community health center is able to provide its services to everybody, regardless of their ability to pay, is we kind of average the cost of the services that we provide, and then the services that we provide to people who can't pay are provided to them, and the cost is averaged over all the payments. So we have, in PCHS, a primary care clinic, we have specialty clinics, we have a dental clinic, we have behavioral health, and we can average the cost of all of those services over our cost line and assist people who can't pay to be able to pay their bill. I can't see exactly the screen there, but the savings that people pass on then, that we pass on to people, comes in terms of reduced cost of care and better access to care. So just for example, there's a lot of different things that we do that kind of highlight that, but I'll tell you one of the fastest areas of growth for us and one of the easiest ways to see it is just like our walk-in clinic for dental. Is if people can have access to immediate care when they have emergent need, like they didn't plan to wake up with a sore tooth today, but there it is. And if they can get in to see a dentist that day, that's really a powerful thing in their life. So walk-in, immediate access, in that term is really important. I talked a little bit about preventative care earlier in terms of population health. So when a person comes into the clinic, they're screened and talked to about a wide variety of problems, and maybe they're not even aware of their potential need in a certain area when they come in. They can come in with a certain complaint, but when the physician looks at them and kind of where they're at in life, they can say, there are some things that you're at risk for, and I'll give you an example. So the CDC has put out that anybody who's born between the ages of, or between the years of 1945 and 1965 are at risk of hepatitis. Hepatitis is a devastating disease, and it affects all of your life, and it can be terminal. But it also can be cured. So one of the things that CDC recommends is that people that were born between those years are routinely screened. So we talk to our patients about that, and that's a population health issue. So someone doesn't come in and say, I think I have hepatitis. They come in with, you know, the sore throat and runny nose. But because they're at that level, we can screen for that, and it's all rolled into the cost, as would be separate from, you know, another type of physician services clinic or even the hospital. It's rolled into the cost of that. And then if we can identify those diseases early, of course, treating them earlier reduces the cost as well. So it's an important factor when dealing with people's health in a population, just as well as it is in an individual level. Yeah. I'll talk a little bit about Peninsula Community Health and the services that we provide, very specifically. So PCHS has, as I said, three separate buildings that we work in and a couple different clinics. We have the primary care clinic and behavioral health clinic here in Soldotna. We have a clinic in Kenai, and then we have the dental clinic in Kenai. And some of the providers go back and forth between different areas, and some are, like, obviously the dental clinic is just in the dental clinic. We have integrated care, so I'm going to talk about that first, and I'm going to talk about our core services, the things that we provide that are extremely important, will continue no matter what, those core services of integrated care, primary care. We have a number of primary care physicians. I'm sure many of you know them. I always talk about Dr. Mack because she's like a saint to me. Little Dr. Mack works endless hours and is one of the best clinicians, medical doctors I've ever seen. She's also a machine. She just like goes through, she just does the work every single day. And it's amazing to see how many people she can see in a day and really help. And the thing with her and with all of our providers, I'm just using her as an example, but it extends to this level of kind of personal care that she gives to people where she's just having the conversation. She's very concerned about their life and she's a very personable physician. The other thing I like about the community health centers is that's the way we look at communities. We're not there, we're a nonprofit, so we're not there to make money. We're there to provide services to the community. And I'm not saying that all doctors are that way. I'm just saying that we, as a community health center, kind of have as our vision and as our foundation, we're part of the community. We provide these services because they're needed, and we have a relationship with the people that are here. So Dr. Max is just a great example of that. Providing those core services that are integrated is kind of who we are as an organization. So when a person comes into the clinic, they're screened. They take a screening assessment. And if the physician thinks they need help in a certain area, they'll refer them. So they'll say, you know, you might want to talk to a counselor. You might want to talk to a psychiatrist. You might want to talk to, you might want to go see the dentist. You might want to go see a specialist. And then much of those services are provided in-house. So if you come into the clinic, you get that level of care and that level of personal relationship all the time. We provide, of course, family practice, general practice, but the specialty clinics that we have is our pain management, which is extremely important for people who are in chronic pain. We have pediatrics, and I'm going to talk about a couple of new services that we have as well. And I know I'm missing some. One of my staff is going to throw a rock at me in a minute, but I'll remember as I'm talking. The new services that we are starting to provide are a response to need that we see in the community. So when I first got here over a year ago now, there had been a health assessment of the area, and one of the things that was specified in there was the need for obstetrics and gynecology, OB work. And so we went out and recruited an OB, and we had that doc come up here, and she's now practicing. But again, as a community health center, how we look at things is holistic. So what we're trying to do is have a clinic where there's an OB attached to a pediatrician, attached to a family practice doc, all in the same place with behavioral health care underneath, which is pretty brilliant, I think. So you have then kind of, I hate to use this term, now I know I'm going to have a rock thrown at me, but you have kind of cradle to the grave service here, right? So you have an OB who works with the prenatal and helps with the delivery and does tremendous clinical care. She also does service on the later ends of life as well as a gynecologist. But then you have the handoff, a clean handoff to a pediatrician who helps out with the child as they're growing. Then you have the family practice doc who sees them as a whole, but underneath them, they have this access and referability to behavioral health care all the time. So if that child has special needs in the school district, or if the child has special needs in this area, or if perhaps they need, you know, family counseling or whatever it is, it's all in-house and pretty seamless. So I think that's pretty amazing service that is provided there. And Dr. Danielson, if you haven't met her, very skilled surgeon, tremendous doc, and I highly recommend her. The other area of service that's new to us, and again, was identified over a year ago, was neuropsychology. So there's a specialized level of testing that is needed for a number of kind of the deep into the pool of behavioralist issues. And what I'm talking about is like FASD, ADHD, traumatic brain injury, dementia, all of those kind of really difficult differential diagnosis requires a specialist to do that. And when we got here, the school district was kind of backed up with needs for assessments for kids for ADHD. And there was a number of needs in the community in this area. And so we went out and found and recruited a neuropsychologist to come down and do those. Now, he's not here full time. He's here 2 days a week, but he comes down and does the assessments for us and then can get them into immediate service, which is pretty amazing. Really, in the past, there's been the need to either send somebody to Anchorage for those assessments or they just weren't done. There's a couple of areas where assessments were being done, but on a very slow basis in the area, and I think we're catching up on that backlog now. So having accessibility to that is extremely important, and again, reduces healthcare costs over time. One of the areas of great cost, not only financially, but in terms of relationship and families, is children who are diagnosed on the Asperger's syndrome somewhere. Autism care is extremely important, and Dr. Kirst, who's the neuropsychologist, can do those assessments. And then last, I want to talk about something that's really near and dear to my heart, obviously being in behavioral health for most of my life, and that is the reentry program, the Reentry Coalition. So I don't even really know where to begin to tell you about this, but there is a huge epidemic of drug and alcohol need in Alaska and a huge one on the peninsula. The governor had declared a state of emergency over the opioid epidemic. It is not only statewide, it's national. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, the big deal for us was, you know, we'd go out and get a, you know, six pack of beer and go down to the beach, and, you know, alcohol was kind of our thing. When I'm talking to younger people nowadays, and including my own family, my nieces all went through this, you know, for them, heroin is easier and cheaper to get than alcohol. And that's pretty amazing. The epidemic is real, and it's devastating to our communities. It's devastating here. And so my big frustration as a behavior health provider is that in this state in particular, because of the way the regulatory authority is outlined over different types of providers, primary care, behavioral health, substance abuse, they have been kind of forever divided in their service line. There's a particular pot of money out there called Community Behavioral Health Treatment and Recovery Grants, CBHTR grants, that just funds mental health. And there's a subset line of that just funds substance abuse. And then you have primary care docs over here that are all concerned about substance abuse, but don't necessarily typically dabble in that. There's a line of service in primary care called medically assisted treatment. That's Suboxone, Subutex, and Vivitrol, that allows some treatment for that. But the three service lines have been kind of divided historically in the state of Alaska. And because they're grant-driven, a lot of the organizations don't really like to talk to each other in the past because there's some competition for funding there. And so it's been difficult. I'll tell you that one of the things that drew me to Soldotna Kenai was the level of collaboration among providers. And right now we have something going on in this little town in Alaska that isn't going on anywhere else in the state, and that's this collaboration of reentry. There are other reentry coalitions, obviously. But the level of collaboration among members here is significantly greater than anywhere else. So right now we have the beginnings of a program that's pretty seamless. If somebody is referred to it, they see a primary care doctor, they get assessed, they get referred to specialty care, they get medically assisted treatment from a doctor, and then they have outpatient treatment or other treatment that's directly connected to that, and it's all in one place. So if you go down to Kenai and you walk into the Benko building, we're trying to rename that the Spot, so I'm going to call it the Spot. If you walk into the Spot down there and you are referred to that program, you'll go to the reentry person and they'll walk you through the process. And you'll go see a primary care doc that belongs to one agency. You'll go see a counselor that belongs to another agency. And that's pretty amazing. So PCHS and Aquila and Cicada, and you know, we have agreements with Serenity House, with the hospital, the Transition Center, the homeless Connect is down there in the building. Pretrial Services wants to get in there. It's a pretty seamless process, and we're working through the kinks. It's not 100% right now, but the level of impact that of potential there is significant. I'm really proud to be a part of PCHS. I'm really proud to be a part of this community, and the collaboration is amazing. Now, economic impact of that. I'll just tell you that the economic impact of substance abuse, the negative economic impact, is significant. The court fees and the uncovered cost of crime and the recovery fees and all of that sort of thing is just out of control in a lot of areas, the Kenai as well. And if we can get control of that and regain health in that area, it really does a lot to balance out our need of economics. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to take questions and answers, but I have exactly 1 minute left. So you have 1 minute for questions. There are, and it depends on what type of community health you're talking about. Again, if you're talking about primary care or reentry. So the Reentry Coalition is actually a Kenai Peninsula-wide reentry coalition. Audrey, who's the executive director of that, goes to Homer. She goes to Seward. If you haven't been able to connect with her, I have her number. Audrey, are you here? No? Okay. So I have her number. There's other board members from the Reentry Coalition that are here. Charlene's back there. I see her. I'll call her out. But I can give you the contact number for her, yeah. All right. Thank you very much.